Testing.
Okay, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. Chris, would you take the roll?
Councilmember Christensen?
Here.
Councilmember Larraway?
Here.
Council President McPherson?
Here.
Mayor Steer?
Here. And if you would join me for the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. We do have a couple of items on the agenda that need to be modified. We need to make resolution R-64-2020, which is item 7, to be item 7A, and then remove item 4C8 from the consent agenda to be item 7B to receive more information on that. And then items 4C4, 5, 6, and 7, the bonds were not submitted, so we need to pull those from the consent agenda. And I believe that's everything.
So that was 1 through which one? 7? No, it would be 6.
4C4, 5, 6, and 7. And I think I have that all on the record if you want to move.
I so move we accept the agenda as Mayor Steer presented it.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to make those changes, and is there any further discussion on that? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. So now we'll move on to the consent agenda with those changes. If there's anything you would like to be pulled or discussed or whatever.
If nothing, I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve the consent agenda with those changes. Is there any further discussion? Chris, would you poll the council?
Councilmember Christensen?
Yes.
Councilmember Larraway?
Yes.
Council President McPherson?
Yes.
And that motion carries. That will bring us right to introduction of the new CUNA police chief, Sheriff Bartlett. Yes, you may.
As
had a great track record with our police department, the sheriff's office. I think back now, 22 years ago, we started a contract here in the city of Tuna, and since then we've had a great relationship with our community, with our schools, with our city council, and with our mayors. And tonight we take that one step further by promoting our next chief of the city of Tuna. And so with that, I would like to share a little bit more about Mike, and I just ask you to come forward and stand here while we're talking a little bit about him. And then we will get him sworn in, and it's nice to see Carrie and the kids here tonight. And we'll give them the opportunity and the police tradition we always can promote the chief traditions and take advantage of sharing that with our friends. We recognize that this is a team sport and we could not be successful as a law enforcement member of the field of our loved ones. So, a little bit about Mike. Mike has been with the Sheriff's Office since 2002. During his 18 years with us, Mike has worked a variety of jobs as both a patrol and detention deputy and as a patrol sergeant. You likely know him best as his tenure here as a patrol sergeant in the city of Tuna, which he began in early 2018. And did so until earlier this year when Mike went through the lieutenant testing, tested extremely high on that, and then moved him into our jail facility. And he's been there working as one of our operations lieutenants since that promotion. He reluctantly left the city of Tuna as I made the selection and moved him into the jail. A little bit about Mike. He was born in California in 1975, but has spent most of his life here in the Treasure Valley. He attended Fairmont Junior High School and graduated from Capitol High School. He then went on to serve 6 years active duty with the Coast Guard, representing our United States military. So that I also say thank you so much to Mike, not only for his service with the Sheriff's Office, but serving this great nation. Thank you so much. During his time with the Coast Guard, he worked in drug interdiction, fisheries enforcement, and heavy weather search and rescue. Mike also served 2 years with the Idaho Air National Guard and security forces. Mike's goal always was to work in law enforcement when he left the Coast Guard, and the 8th Sheriff's Office was a great match. We hired him in October of 2002 as a detention deputy, and he's progressed, as we talked about, since then, Mike has worked as a patrol deputy in North and South County, in the city of Eagle, in Tuna Contract. He's worked as a sergeant and leader of our Sheriff's Office Crisis Intervention team for a number of years. He worked on our Action and Community Crime Team as a juvenile detective and a number of other assignments before being reassigned here all the way up into Tuna Police Chief. Excited about the experience that he brings. As Tuna Chief, many of you know, working hand-in-hand with our department, this is not just a small task. Right now, he will manage 12 patrol deputies. Many of them are standing outside the window here to share in his success. 2 patrol sergeants, 4 detectives, and an administrative assistant. It is a great honor of mine as the sheriff of Ada County to present you your next Tuna City Police Chief, Mike Petrusco. Thank you. And with that, we at the Sheriff's Office have a very unique oath that we ask all of our employees to take. It doesn't matter if you're sworn in as one of our records checks or Scott, Mike, if you will, raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear or affirm.
I do solemnly swear or affirm.
That I will support and defend.
I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States of America.
The Constitution of the United States of America.
And the Constitution and laws.
And the Constitution and laws.
I will earn the respect of others.
I will earn the respect of others.
By being ethical and professional at all times.
By being ethical and professional at all times.
I pledge to carry out my duties.
I pledge to carry out my duties.
As chief of police.
As chief of police.
To the best of my ability.
To the best of my ability.
And bring honor to the Ada County Sheriff's Office.
And bring honor to the Ada County Sheriff's Office.
And to myself.
And to myself.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations. And with that, I would ask Mike's wife, Carrie, to come forward and take on the hardest job in the world of getting a badge on somebody else's shirt.
And fix his collars.
Step out of the way so Mike can say a few words, but I, as your sheriff of Ada County, I have thoroughly enjoyed our relationship. This last week we had an opportunity to go through oral boards. We had a number of very qualified candidates to take on this position, and after a great discussion with the mayor, we decided that Mike was the person to lead this agency into the next 10 years. Thank you for your participation. Thank you, City Council, for your trust in the Sheriff's Office to provide you with the high level of policing services that we love to do. And we look forward to an even longer relationship in the future. So with that, Chief Mike Petrusco.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor Steer, City Council, residents, family, friends, I very much appreciate this opportunity. I know I stood in front of you approximately 2 years ago and told you that my goal was to be the chief of police out here for the city of Ada. I worked very hard towards that goal with the help of the people I work with, my family, Chief McDaniel, mentored me. Going back years ago, just so you know, Chief McDaniel was one of my first sergeants I worked for when I worked in the city of Eagle. I think I worked for him for approximately 6 years. I had the opportunity to be assigned in Eagle with him, with Captain Dussault, with Sheriff Bartlett. We worked together very closely and built some good relationships. I want you to know that I know you're losing Chief McDaniel, but I guarantee that I will keep up what he was doing and will forge forward in this community. Going back even further, I know Councilman Laraway. I don't know if you know, but he was actually my Coast Guard recruiter back in 1993. He was just a little younger.
We both were.
So we have that relationship also, and I was able to work alongside him when he was working for the Sheriff's Office. I'm always available and open, just like Chief McDaniel was, and I promise you, you won't miss a step once I take over. Thank you.
And Sheriff, I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of the process, selecting the new chief. And like you said, we had great candidates, and it's just hard to overlook the heart and passion of a man like Mike Petrusco. He, you know, when I first became mayor, one of our biggest problem areas in the city was our skate park in town. It was very frustrating. It was one of those things where there was not much we could do about it, and things were out of control. I actually thought about having them take down the backhoe and just tear it up and bury it. I mean, it was that bad. And so realizing that probably wasn't a very smart option, we forged forward, and Mike took that kind of under his wing and went down there, and he worked on that for a little while, and I think it was only probably a couple of months after he started work in that area, that I realized, what happened to the skate park? I don't hear any more complaints about it anymore. He had gone down there and started working with those kids and gained their trust and actually has made great impacts on some young people's lives. So, Mike, I want to thank you for that, and I know that that's what you're going to continue to do while you're here. So I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to the opportunity, and we'll do good things together. So thank you. Next, we have a presentation for Chief McDaniel. It's been a great pleasure to have you as the chief of the city of CUNA. Chief keeps me posted on things all the time that I may or may not hear about. No one ever likes to get blindsided, and he makes sure that I'm not. So there's been quite a few times where at least a couple of times where we had some really major incidents that went down in CUNA that could have gone really bad. And because of our police chief and the sheriff's department and the other police agencies and the relationships we all have together, those situations were handled as best as they could be without losing any citizens. And it was just, it's just one of those relationships. You can sleep at night knowing that you're in good hands. So I appreciate all of our officers greatly. I would hate to see that we lose more than a couple at a time. So, Chief, we're going to miss you a lot, but I'm glad we keep everybody else here. So, with that, the clerk's office and then the other city staff worked on a book that kind of highlights a lot of pictures in here, a lot of comments from the city staff on appreciation for you and what you've done for our city. And you will be missed. We may joke otherwise, but you've been great. So I'd like to thank you for your service and present you with this book that was lovingly crafted by our clerk's office and other departments.
Very nice. Thank you, Mayor.
He's going to be here for a little longer, so we don't lose him tonight. But all right. Well, Sheriff, thank you. I don't know if you want to hang out or not, but I appreciate you. I know you're busy, and I appreciate you taking the time. And I can't thank our police officers that we have here in the city of CUNA enough. Do a fantastic job. They always work at helping people rather than causing them problems, and I appreciate that so much. We live in a great community, and they are patriotic, like the chief said, and that is in great part because of the way you folks treat them and work with our community. So thank you all. I appreciate everybody. All right, now it feels like we should have had refreshments or something. All right, that will bring us to public hearings. Item 6A, public hearing tabled from October 6th, 2020, and consideration on case number 2020-01-S, preliminary plat, Fossil Creek subdivision. Troy, I believe, has an update on that. Thank you, sir. Yes.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. For the record, for the beginning, this is weird being with you, by the way. Already in the city limits of Cuna, and they're listed in your packet and shown on the vicinity map. The project is located near the southwest corner of Gears Flat Road and 10 Mile Road. The applicant is proposing to subdivide approximately 56.75 acres already in the city of Cuna to create a subdivision known as Fossil Creek Subdivision. It is currently zoned R5 and was zoned back with the original application back in 2003. That is a medium density residential zone. However, R5 does not exist anymore. And so that's why it's unfamiliar. The property was zoned with the original pre-plat back in 2003. The future land use map does, and the comprehensive plan for the city of Cuna, it does identify this parcel as medium density residential, which equals between 4 and 8 dwelling units per acre. This application is requesting approximately 4.07 gross dwelling units per acre. This proposed subdivision has also provided for up to 8.4 acres of usable open space, which actually equates to about 12.5% of the site. That includes trails along the Ramsey Lateral and the future open space segment for the, up along the Indian Creek Corridor. Plus, there are internal open spaces and trails. Staff used this proposal to be in concert with the future land use map, or the FLU map, and also the comprehensive plan of the city of Cuna. Applicant is proposing 217 single-family home lots in connection with 11 common lots for a total of 283 lots. Staff has confirmed that the applicant will work with Public Works to bring utilities to the site and through the site and provide future stubs for future connections and also provide stubs for future traffic as needed to adjacent properties. Public utilities shall be provided by the developer at their cost and will be extended to the site in sufficient sizes. Staff has recommended that the applicant be conditioned on multiple items, including working with the Cuna Rural Fire District for proper permanent secondary access to all streets, including gear platforms, be improved, widened, and dedicated as public roads, curb gutters, sidewalks at the appropriate widths. At the planning and zoning commission meeting earlier this year, the commission did make a couple of recommendations to which the applicant has responded to in a positive way. There was a request from some neighbors to move a substreet which the city does require on the south side of the property. And the applicant has not only updated their pre-plat, but they have provided a copy, and that copy of that updated pre-plat is in the packet, which does show that the substreet was moved as requested. Staff would forward on a positive recommendation. dedication to the project. They provided everything we've asked them to. And I will stand for any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Troy? Okay, thank you. Jane Suggs, did you want to? You want me to open up the public hearing part for that? Okay. So this is a public hearing. We'll go ahead and open that up. I have some people that have signed up to testify. Is there anyone who didn't sign up who wishes to testify in this matter? Okay. Thank you, Jane. If you would like, go ahead and you know the drill. Name and address.
Of your package, you'll see the vicinity map and it's fully explained. And as noted in the staff report, the Poplar Creek was originally annexed and zoned and subdivided in 2003. That plat expired. A new plat and traffic study were required so that plat could meet current requirements, like community open space requirements. And also, the traffic study could actually reflect ongoing traffic now as opposed to 2003. Our updated plat actually eliminated some very long cul-de-sacs and provided quite a bit more open space, communities, and pathways. If you look on page 223 of your packet, you'll see an updated preliminary plat. For 272 single-family homes with a density of 4.07 dwellings per acre, of course, that is if you compare your median density. In fact, we're at kind of a low end of that. The lots that are closest to the park that are along Deer Flat are about 4,500 square feet. Those are smaller lots close to the park. And along the south boundary, where we are adjacent to some larger lots, we have lots that range as high as 13,000 square feet. Our average lot size is 6,935 square feet. If you look on page 224 of your package, you'll see our landscape plan. Again, including 8.2 acres of usable open space. And this does not include the street buffers or impacts that you see throughout the project. You can see that desk on that landscape plan. There's a 5-acre park with a playground, covered shelter, and a half basketball court, if you want to know. An additional 2.5 acres of open play area is on the east side of the property, next to the Ramsey Lateral, and we have pathways and sidewalks that connect all of these open spaces. Of course, we're building our streets to the HUMA and ACHD standards. We're providing stub streets to the southwest, south, and east to connect to potential and existing developments. Our students will attend Crimson Point Elementary, which is just to the north, HUMA Middle School, which is just across the street, and either HUMA High or Swan Falls High. And we finally get this kid back in school. It'll take about 5 years to build out lots of streets. We've heard from some of our neighbors who are quite concerned with traffic on Deer Flat and 10 Mile. Of course, these are arterial streets that are expected to carry the bulk of the traffic in the valley. I did just find out recently, because in September 20th, I think, the Ada County Highway District did just vote on their new integrated 5-year work plan. So I went to that and found out that the 5-year work plan does show school zone beacons at 10 Mile of Boise near Tuna Middle School. They look like they will be installed in 2022, which is good news. A single lane know those council members, but I think that's a good use to know that they're basically looking at these areas and improving the traffic flow there. Again, our Fossil Creek preliminary plat improves the street network, adds pathways and open space, and provides homes that are within walking distance to elementary and middle schools. And it's just a short drive or even a bike ride downtown here. We've actually designed this to meet all the subdivision codes, and we agree with the conditions of approval. We do respectfully request your approval. I do know that our sewer in this particular case, and I know there's some concerns with sewer around here, but our sewer connects to a trunk line and Thistle Drive that flows between some Trunkville Station. And we stand ready to assist the city in any way we can to make sure that the sewer issues are handled. That will help in categories of schedules. Thank you. And Paul, I can talk with our project engineer about other sewers. Just wanted to say thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you. Again, this is the preliminary plat already zoned and annexed. And we will stand for questions, but thank you for the opportunity that has submitted and conditioned that. So.
Okay. Thank you. A question for the applicant.
I have one. Let me find it again. Where is it at? On page 74 of 158 there. Let me get to it. Sorry. Yes, it's, and then you scroll too fast and it goes
one way. Ramsey Drain?
Well, no, so the way the ditches are out through the middle, I don't know if you have that picture in front of you, or you're probably familiar with it.
I don't have your whole package.
Oh, okay. Okay. Just the way that's going to be in phased, it doesn't show some of those ditches connecting out there, and I wonder, I mean, if they're going to, because like, Phase 5, I think, was the east side, like that'd be the southeast section of the project. And if that's continued to farm, ditch 2 and 3 need to keep connected because elsewise Phase 2 over there is going to be underwater.
Mm-hmm. So I do know that that will happen when you get that design and approved by ACHP very soon, that we can do that construction. That would be a little piece of construction on the northeast corner.
Mm-hmm.
We begin construction on the south west side. That's where our sewer comes through on this thistle.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you're right. Phase 1 will start there. Phase 2 will move to the east. Phase 3 is down along the south side. I don't know exactly what the question is other than if it continues to be agriculture,
which
is your main main ditch.
Right.
But I'm not sure
that it will continue to be farmed. Gotcha. But certainly we won't create any problems for farmers if they need that water. In fact, that's a small. Well, it's that's just a drain out there. I have a little firsthand knowledge in that property. My dad's the one that farms it, so. That's why I was just curious, because if they don't connect that over there, they continue to let him farm the east side. But it never showed on any of the things where that made a connection to anything. So I was just curious.
I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Oh, that's fine.
Have more inside knowledge than I do with your dad.
Well, I don't have inside knowledge, I guess, but it's going to be a huge mess. That's all I was going to point out. So.
When we get into our construction drawings, I'm certain that will be something that I will write up down and make sure
Sure. Gotcha. Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Further question? None.
Yeah, if I may, and you might not be able to answer this, and that's okay, but I want to ask anyways. You did talk about the sewer because it has been a big topic of discussion over the last few meetings. And with this development, putting that lift station over capacity, you said we're ready to help in any way possible. What does that mean?
That means that someone needs to determine what the solution is, and it's not the applicants to do that. Your engineer and his consultants, I think,
okay,
are looking at that to make sure they have options for what that means. Does that mean increasing pumps from the station? Does that mean increasing pipe sizes? We don't know what all of those solutions are. We know that we've been mostly talking about on the other side of the road, the sewer, because of the issue with the pattern and the management system, but we know that the management system has to improve. But we're not here to tell you what to do. We're here to help whenever that solution has been determined and everybody gets the right options. So
okay.
If it means putting up money or if it means doing some active construction, additional piping or something, we just know that I'm representing Trilogy. This property was owned by Corey Barton, who is Bifoot Investments. We love Cuba, and we're not going to go away. We're going to help continue to make this a great place to be.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything further? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Claire Marsala.
As a layperson who's unfamiliar with the way the city planning and all that works, I'm going to ask a question and not be facetious. I really would like an answer if I can get one. Is the purpose of this meeting here to decide yes or if you're going to approve or not approve the subdivision? You know, there are signs put up that alert the community that there's going to be a meeting, and we come and sign up and we write letters and we share our concerns. And do you ever say no to a subdivision in Cuba? Because it doesn't seem like it. Because it's so overcrowded. The schools are overcrowded. We can hardly get out on our road in the morning. I can't imagine, even with a roundabout, if you have a possible, 300 homes there and maybe 600 more cars, plus Corey Martin is still developing Crimson Point. There's a ton of houses going in the end of your flat. And if these councilors and mayor have never been at that intersection in the morning, I plead that you would please go and look at what it looks like, because it's nuts. But do you ever say no?
So yes, I mean we did recently on a very large development. It was one though that we could control. It wasn't annexed, so we were able to stop the annexation and make that go. Some of these, the problem that we have a lot of times is that so when the wastewater treatment plant was built, there was an LID formed, the economy tanked. That wasn't going to be sold to private ownership because there was no way to pay for that. The city worked a deal with Key Bank in order to sell those EDUs. We are required to, in order to not breach that agreement, to sell sewer connections. And as long as people that buy property are following the laws and the rules, it's not fair for us to tell them that they can't. And the issue that we have right now is growth at the rate that it's happening is creating some problems. It's creating backlogs on the need for some infrastructure as far as roads and highways. It creates issues in water and sewer. The wastewater treatment plant took care of a lot of that. Had that not been built, the city of CUNA would have had to bond for that and make that happen because our old plant at the time was not wouldn't meet the DEQ requirements. And so it was a necessary thing to happen. We're not having to pay taxes on that or bond for that because it was already built. We couldn't bond for it after it was already built. But the agreement with KeyBank is key in order to pay for that treatment plant. So we have a ways to go with that. And like I say, a lot of these properties were annexed back before the economy tanked. So there was plans on all those things already happening. So when new ownership takes over those properties, they have rights when they buy that to utilize those properties for development and make money on them. That's what they do. We don't, council doesn't, is not necessarily comfortable with all of this growth at the rate that it's happening, but there are certain things that we can't control. The reason for the public hearings is to take care of issues where, you know, it might be have a harmful impact on a neighbor or, you know, like the applicant had suggested, they move some stub streets because of issues. And so we try to resolve
that. They only moved it one lot, and so it still goes through the middle of our property. I mean, if there ever is a street going through, it cuts our property. You know? So when they say they moved it,
oh, okay.
But anyway, you know, so if, can you ever say no, like, well, we're going to let you build houses, but you have to be acre lots, or, you know, especially when they're backed up against these 5-acre lots that we have on our road. You know, they jammed Sago Prairie in years ago. I think the city council at the time didn't even know we were there. Where are you? Secluded Park? They, you know, and so we just kind of feel like, you know what, we're going to change the name to but so is there a way to say, you know, I realize that what she said, there is an average of an R4, but you know, can you say yes, we're gonna allow you to build, but you know, the schools are overcrowded and all that stuff, you know, acre lots or something?
Well, they follow the comprehensive plan. So again, they're following the rules. The comprehensive plan says that they could have up to 8 per acre. So they're back to 4. So, I mean, we're trying to compromise down so that we make things a little less impactful. But, you know, honestly, council. Right? That'd be nice. Yeah.
So, thank you.
Yeah. No. And I appreciate the question because that's one of those things that, you know, it's not always comfortable for council to approve things when they know. One of the hardest things ever is sitting up in these seats when the people out there are looking at you and glaring at you, because you know they want you to say no, but we took an oath to follow the laws. And
on behalf of our neighbors, we promise we would glare at
you. No, and I appreciate it. I know you're longtime residents, and I appreciate your comments and your thoughts, so thank you.
One more thing on that, too. If ACHD doesn't submit something back and say, that road's overcrowded, they say, no, it's fine. It's no reason for denial on our part. If they would step forward and say, oh, that road can't handle that kind of traffic, blah, 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 that would give us grounds to deny or make them, you know, readjust lot sizes to acre lots or something. But when they stamp approved, it ties our hands here because all the I's are dotted at that point. So
people around start pressing you guys on the internet. It's
yes. Yes.
All right, John Marcella.
Good evening, everyone. My name is John Marcella. I live in Cleveland. Adult depth in regards to the facts, in regards to 10 Mile and Dirt Flat. In regards to Falls Creek subdivision, the proposal back in 2003, Crimson Point, and all the fourplexes, the apartments were not established at that time. The 10 Mile Road, a half mile between Argyle and Boynton Avenue, has five intersections, okay? Five side streets, a hog light for crosswalk, okay? Initial Point High School and Tudor Middle School. The time between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. in the morning is ridiculous. We can't even get out of the Supreme Court to make a lot of time in the morning because the traffic is backed up from Deer Flat to Initial Point High School and vice versa going south. And the cars that want to turn left into the Initial Point High School parking lot cannot because the traffic going north is backed up. So when you come to that intersection, you can't even turn left. You have to go right to go down to Boise Avenue. That's how congested the traffic is. And with the Deer Flat intersection being overutilized, and like my wife said, I don't even think a roundabout, a one-lane roundabout, is going to be sufficient enough to handle all that traffic, especially with all the other subdivisions that are coming online on 10 Mile Road that are beyond our hill. We all know that Argyle eventually gets punched through to Linder. That is going to become a very busy intersection also. So Deer Flat being overutilized, and also at the same time, I've watched school buses come up to the intersection of Springfield Estates and the Initial Point High School to pick up kids in the morning, okay? They stop right in front of that street and the parking lot on Initial Point to pick up the kids. And I watch cars make left-hand turns right in front of that bus with the kids approaching the school bus from the curb. That's how dangerous it is at that time. And then you have two in the middle school bringing all their buses in at the same time to drop kids off and to exit middle school. It is very congested, and that is a two-lane farm road. It has not been approved, okay, for all of that extra traffic that's coming in from Discovery Creek, Crimson Point, off of Argyle, people who cross 10 Mile, okay, to make a left to go north on Argyle to get on the 10 Mile. They're crossing traffic to make a left-hand turn to go north. It is very, very dangerous, and with the kids and the school buses, that really needs to be looked at. It is so congested. There's so much foot traffic. Okay. Also, in the afternoon, it's the same thing all over again. Also, you
3 minutes are up, sir. Pardon? Your 3 minutes are up, sir.
Oh. Okay. You can go ahead and wrap up.
All right. Also, it's the reverse in the afternoon, and you have the kids walking to a middle school over to Initial Point High School, and their parents pick them up in that parking lot because it's so congested over at the middle school. And then that plugs the traffic up again at the Mitchell Point High School, traffic trying to get out, whether north or south. It's a very dangerous situation. And, like my wife said, with the 283 homes, you're talking the rule of thumb, two cars per household, that's only 600 cars that are going to affect those roads. And in regards to secluded court, real quick, we feel like our concerns have been minimized, all right? And first of all, the sub streets that they've moved one block over, okay? There is going to be a structure on the other side of the fence, a bollard or some sort of structure that has a deadly sign on it that kids are going to climb up on. They're going to jump the fence and they're going to cross our property. Ours and Jacobson's to get to school or get to town or what have you, because we already experienced that with the kids and people coming across the pasture to go fish. We're concerned about the stub street. We don't know why it can't be deleted, just as the stub street was deleted on Sago Prairie behind the Jordan's property. And also the dust We all know when they do the underground work, they take all the topsoil up, they put all the underground work in, and they're going to turn that area into a dust bowl. We're concerned about the three in-ground swimming pools that are there and are going to collect all that dust. Okay, we're concerned about that. Also, the irrigation water pump, Ramsey 577, just as you said, and the neighbors beyond Ramsey, they had their water box torn up twice when they were doing Crimson Point. I've got 104 trees on my property. They need water during the summertime. If they don't get water, they'll become stressed. I'm concerned about that box being torn up on Ramsey 577 and my trees aren't getting the proper water they need.
We have had some issues with some developments that were causing issues for neighbors. I think we're doing a lot better job at keeping an eye on that and making sure that things that do happen get taken care of. You know, we've made some internal process changes that have made things a little better. We watch them a little closer on the dust control and that type of thing. I mean, some of it's going to happen for sure.
Sure,
but,
sure. So, Joe and I, we've known each other a long time. His son, my son, they play football together in high school. And the other thing in regards to irrigation water, and Jane was over to my property, and I was showing her how the water flows. It flows northwest, and the runoff flows down the collection pond between the Hinson's property and the property on Walter Creek. And it collects there, and we do not have the resources. We don't have an earth mover. We don't have a dozer. We don't have any of that stuff to level that dirt out or that the lay of the land, so to speak, the elevations, to stop that water from collecting there. I have cut in a ditch on my property, across my property line to the irrigation ditch on Spoon Creek, and Dan Hinsis has done all the same also to drain some of that water off, but we do not have the resources to bring that elevation up to prevent that water from collecting, and so we're concerned about how that's going to be fixed in regards to the elevation.
Okay.
I'm not here to say no. I just want all our concerns to be addressed.
So I think on a lot of stuff like that, we'll work with you on that. We'll make sure, if nothing else, our public works department can take a look at things and make sure that we're addressing the issues that need addressed, and we'll do the best we can with that.
Yeah, I don't want the loss to be put in an irrigation water flooding out or maybe something. I don't want that. That's not
good. Right. Okay. Thank you, John. Did anybody have any other questions for Mr. Marsala? Okay, thank you. And I didn't have anybody else signed up to testify. Was there anybody who didn't get a chance to sign up and would like to? Okay. Jane, would you like to address some of those things?
Yes, sir. Thank you again, Jane. Some of those are concerns that will be handled as we move through the construction drawing process. So the details will be worked out. I think there was some concern about the property boundary being not exactly where the fence, the wire fence line is. And certainly we will have a survey. We've already surveyed. We'll state that we would not be moving it on the rest of the property. The Stubbs Street, we did move it over. We did have to maintain some separation from the adjacent streets that are coming off that same east-west street on the south, along just north of Mr. Marshall's property. So we moved it over. At one point, it did actually just right in the middle of this property. Now we moved it over some. It will not be a street through this property. It will be a fence, a vinyl fence that will run along the whole southern boundary of property. And yes, there'll be a street that ends there, just like any Stubbs Street. You have to take it from the property boundary to the fence line. I would accept a condition to be added that would say that we would make sure that whatever is put there at the end of that street, because there will be a sign that says this street may be extended in the future, we've seen them in all subdivisions. My hope with that sign would just be on the fence and not on a saw horse, I think you're talking about, something that would
give people an opportunity to try to climb up and over the fence. Again, I know that kids will cross in a few fields and they can, but if there's a fence and eventually there'll be houses, so I'm hoping that that would be the case, is that we might make a condition that says that sign will be on the fence and situated in a way that doesn't provide an opportunity to just climb the fence. I don't know that experience, so if one from our politics, that's an issue, we would add that as a condition. So you might want to write that down, that we will work with him to make sure that, there isn't some opportunity there. Dust is an issue that comes with construction. Of course, this has been an agricultural area. It's plowed every summer, so I'm assuming that dust was an issue in the past. But we do have technology and techniques, and as the mayor said, a little bit closer watch on any of these projects that will require watering of the site. So we have that, but that happens during construction. And irrigation box, I don't know any reason why we would be carrying up an irrigation box and charging and having problems with irrigation as we move forward. There's, again, a state law, if we have something to share with us, that requires us to maintain irrigation throughout the irrigation season. And we do our best if we're doing work around an irrigation system that we do that before the water from the system. It's kind of a well-known fact for our engineers. I know that we talked about this before when we bought the property. There is, right now there's irrigation for crops. When we don't farm that, we'll have a pressurized irrigation system that kind of sprinkles the yards in the common spaces. And I don't think that that's going to create quite a runoff issue. We certainly would work with Mr. Marcella and all the neighbors that back up to this property to make sure that when we put our fence in, we don't want our water to run off onto his property, and we certainly don't want his flood irrigation water to run into the yards that we'll be building, the backyards. So certainly that is something that will be worked out as we raise the site. So, and making sure that any kind of irrigation system that actually runs along the south property boundary is piped in, or that plenty of opportunity is made to keep that water maintained. Is there something else I need to answer? I know we've talked several times with Mark Follows. They've been really good about coming to our meetings. I don't think there's a way for us to not put in the sub street because of the flood of the AC Street. I'm standing for some more questions.
Okay. Any further questions?
I just closed by saying thank you very much for the opportunity to unite, and I'm hoping that we can have our flat approved and we'll move forward.
Okay.
Thank you.
And so, John, we'll make sure, I'm assuming you have her contact information, and then city contact information. Please let us know if there's an issue that arises. We certainly don't want things hanging out. We don't like it when things happen to other people's properties when development's happening. So. Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. Council? Troy, one thing that was, one thing that was brought up by fire was a secondary access. Do you know if that was resolved? It sounds more like that is a question for the immediate future on like the first phase or two. They had asked these. I paid them away. There it is. One issue that keeps coming up is a second access. Each phase over 30 lots has to have a second access. We can approve a temporary period of time, along with the permanent, is coming in the very near future. Do we know if this has a very near future on the second access?
Good question. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The record for engineering
Okay.
An issue right now. I think that was just more preemptive on the chief's.
Sure. The rest of their comment had to do with, looked like the hydrant placement and all of the normal things. So.
And when it comes in for plan review for the first phase, if they don't have what's necessary, the chief will get another look at the stab at it, and so will planning and zoning, and so will.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Troy. Yes, Warren.
I guess more or less it's just a general question, and maybe Troy can answer it. Maybe one of you guys can answer it. But when we approve a preliminary plat, I hear a lot of, well, in the next discussion, we'll make sure we take care of this, we'll take care of that. Is there reasons we don't approve preliminary plats if these things are already outlined and in place? Because it's like we're approving something, saying, okay, we'll approve this, but we'll make sure this is taken care of before the next discussion. Things like the sewer, things like the secondary access, those types of things that we're saying, okay, yep, we're going to go ahead and approve it, but let's make sure it's taken care of in the future. Is this more or less just our way of saying, okay, here we go, let's approve a subdivision, and then we'll make sure and solidify the details later on?
Member Christensen, Mr. Mayor, for the record, for the end and again. So, as you put, are we just kind of kicking the can further down without any checks and balances? So, to answer your question, the preliminary plat, as it's approved in whatever form for this subdivision, for the next one, for all the past ones, those preliminary plats, they're solidified. That is what we gauge all of the final plats in each of their phases for in the future. So if it doesn't fit this, so let's just talk about this particular one, but it applies to all of them. The secondary access, it has to be met. Right now, this preliminary plat does show 3 points of access to one subdivision and also two spots on your flat, just for example. So they're not going to build all of it at one time. Right. However, it is up to the developer to ensure that they phase it correctly so that they follow the secondary access requirements, for example. If you look at their phasing plan, which is included with the flat, I believe that it does follow that. Can you correct me if I'm wrong? And if we do see discrepancies, where we say, how in the world are you ever going to achieve secondary access? Now is the time for us to say, hey, you know, look, we need to do that. However, this preliminary plat does indicate that there are different points of connection where at some point they will achieve secondary permanent access. And the same thing goes for utilities. The developer has to put in a preliminary utility plan, and then when they go for development for the first phase, they obviously have to have sewer water pressure irrigation. So they have to follow rules from the very beginning. So they have to know the full picture before they start on phase one. So it's a methodical thing. So we're not, even though it sounds like we're kind of kicking it down the road, we're actually not. We're not kicking down secondary access. We're not kicking the can down the road for utility because those things are already in place. They have to follow exactly what all authorized to require them to do.
And I understand that. What I don't understand is why these things aren't in play before the initial review anyways, to say we know that a full build out, we're going to be over capacity on EDUs. So right now, from what I'm gathering, we're putting conditions that say, okay, but before they actually start building, we'll make sure Paul has a plan in place so that we don't go over EDUs. And we don't have any of that. But that's what you're saying is that's further on down the road. That's when we're ready for the build and the phasing. And
some of it is left to use the things. I mean, Paul can probably articulate it better than I can. He can talk with the utilities all day long. All I know is for each subdivision, when Ms. Jane brings in a final plat subdivision, if they don't have sewer capacity, they won't get what's called a will serve letter for each phase from Paul. So we hold their feet to the fire by saying, you can't get a will serve letter. Therefore, no preliminary plat, no final plat, no houses. So then if there is a problem, then they're basically required to come up with either a financial repair or there's construction that has to take place, much like what happened with Corbis Cove. On paper, it looked like we were out of EDP. And then they went back and they looked at it, they reviewed it, they re-reviewed it, and then they re-reviewed the review. And they found that they actually had something. So while things do look like they may not fit right now, the only way to do that is to test it. Is that a fair assumption, Paul? I know you are. But as for secondary access, which was one of your questions, that I can say they have provided what the fire department would approve.
Thanks, Troy.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Gigray.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney. With regards to capacity and will serve, I think what we had talked about with Corbin Cove was that if we get a preliminary plat and at the time the preliminary plat is being approved, that there would be a condition if there we cannot do a will serve, that they you approve the preliminary plat, but the preliminary plat has a condition in it that they cannot submit a final plat until we have the ability to serve, so we do not prove plats until we have the ability to serve the lots. And so I think that was the course that we were proceeding, and I don't know if that's the situation in this particular case, but I know that's what we were working on. And I think when we discussed that condition, as was mentioned by Troy, that they found that they did have that capacity. But if you don't have that capacity and you can't guarantee it at this point, I do think that's a good condition to have. And the way we worked it out before was that if we still could not, at the end of the two-year period, when they have to submit a final plat, issue a will serve because we got capacity problems, that would be considered reasonable grounds for them to request an extension of time in which to file a final plat. You get, as a council, as you probably well know, and Mr. Mayor, with your permission, you get into a tough spot in subdivision applications because you're not dealing with the discretion you have in an annexation. You deal with a piece of property that's already zoned, and unless it has a development agreement that restricts the use of that property specifically in the development agreement, as long as they meet the terms and conditions of the subdivision ordinance and the staffing recommendations associated therewith, and they are proposing a development that is allowable under the subdivision law, unless you have it conditioned with a development agreement, then permitting is generally in offing. With regards to traffic issues, the city, I'm sure, works with the ACHD. That's the highway jurisdiction. If you're in Canyon County, it's different. You would have that jurisdiction. Here you don't. It's in Ada County. But by law, Ada County has to approve a plat. So it's not just you, it's the Ada County or Ada County Highway District as well, and of course they deal with specifics of the highway, and in this instance the stub street would be a condition that they would have, which they'll have to meet or they won't approve the plat, preliminary plat. And so I don't know in this instance of if we have a capacity problem now that we can't do will serves. I do recommend that we have a condition in them that we won't allow. They cannot submit a final plat till we are able to do that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Very good. Anyone else?
Okay. Then I would so move we close the Let's see, I always do this wrong. Close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Yes.
Okay. Just to let you know, I have to recuse myself from this because I went before this on planning and zoning, so I'm going to have to recuse myself.
So noted.
Okay, very good.
I second it. Yeah.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
So, Greg, we're moved into deliberation right now, and this is just a conversation I want to
yes.
have outside of the public side of it. I really appreciate Bill stepping in and explaining everything that was with that, and, you know, I think we all understand that as a council and things, and we all have to take to heart what everybody says and looks at things, and I do want to read a quote from ACHD, okay, just to see exactly what they said about this road. And we're going to stay away right now just from the recommendation because I think this is important. It's on page 39 of 158, Exhibit B2. So it's on page 243 overall of 665. So they say, this is in staff comments and recommendations, staff has reviewed the submitted traffic impact study and generally agrees with the findings and recommendations. The traffic impact study identified that the roadway segment of 10 Mile Road between Ardell Road and Hubbard Road is expected to exceed the level of service planning thresholds as a two-lane minor arterial for the 2025 full build-out traffic conditions for the morning peak hour, but meet the thresholds for the PM peak hour. Okay, it's important to note, of course, PM peak hours are rated as a D already. So that's great. It meets recommendations. It's rated as a D, but it's going to be over capacity at full build-out for morning conditions. This segment is listed in the CIP to be widened to three lanes, which is great, but that's not until 2031 and 2035, sometime between there. Really opening it up. ACHD goes on to approve it still after that, which they approve on their own terms and reasons, but that doesn't take away from the discussion and the concerns that John and Clara brought up about morning traffic and the safety related to it. Because what we're seeing right now in that stretch of road is plots of ground with houses and apartments and townhomes all going up presently as we speak. And so with these roads already graded at a D level for peak level for PM and already stated just with this one subdivision is going to be over capacity for morning peak, but nothing's going to be done till 2031, those safety concerns are incredibly warranted, and ACHD said themselves that it does not meet the threshold at full peak. So they recommended something that they've even said does not meet the threshold, and nothing's being done for another 10, 11 years. And so when you talk about the safety side of things, and you talk about the schooling, and you talk about the roads, and you really talk about how we're not able to keep up with the growth that we currently have, that right there is concern enough for me to look at this in a bigger picture and take ACHD words directly and say, they've even said, this doesn't meet the service planning threshold. They've already rated it as a D, but that doesn't account for the bare land with subdivisions already going up in that stretch. That will change this subject as they're phasing. So these are things that are always like that, and I understand that. But we as a council are asked to look away from that, because at the bottom line it says ACHD recommends this. And I have to take ACHD's words at heart that says this exceeds their service level of planning, and they can't do anything for another 6 years after full build out. And quite honestly, if there's a legal stance that's against that, I need to know. Because that right there is already counterintuitive to, are we following ACHD? Are we? They say recommended, so we ignore what they have to say about the roads.
I get 100% what you're saying. I know I've been down that road at that time of day. It's a disaster. But if council will correct me if I'm wrong, once again, if they give it a stamp of approval, even if they say it's wrong, but we approve it anyway, it doesn't give us grounds to not approve. Am I correct?
Yep. Mr. Mayor, members of the council, Bill Gigray, city attorney, Councilman McPherson, in my view, they have the right to seek a subdivision approval, and so the issue, does it meet your standards? Has it met the requirements of the city under those standards? Does it meet the zoning requirements of the zoning law in which it was under at the time that it was annexed into the city? Even though that isn't an ordinance today, it's still what the permitted use was at that point in time. And if it meets those standards, which I understand, I think the staff report says it does, then you need to find some violation, I do think, if there is an issue of capacity to serve this with sewer or water or irrigation water, whatever that is a service of the city. I do recommend that there should be a firm condition in any approval of any preliminary plat like that, that the preliminary plat's approved, but it's subject to, before final plat can be submitted for approval, that there will serve on those services from the city. And if more than 2 years goes by, which is the time period to file a final plat, and there still isn't that capacity, that the applicant would be able to seek an extension of time to file a final plat until the will serve exists. So I think there are ways of dealing with that, having with what Councilman Christensen is concerning, is having some firm conditions before final plat. And I think it's also a way of administering this so that these applicants, as they get their preliminary plats approved, can be in line, even though we got a capacity problem, so that once we do meet that capacity, we do have that capacity, then they are able to move forward with their final plats. And I think it's a good way to manage it. And I think that was the approach we talked about with Corbin Cove, kind of worked itself out, but I think it's a way for us to deal with those issues. Now, if you're looking at total overloads or whatever, then I think we're looking at moratoriums and their limitations on those and how long they can go. I think you'd want to coordinate with other agencies before you headed down that road. And again, remember, ACHD has plat authority. It can't be approved unless they approve it. They have to sign off. And if you were in Canyon County, you would sign off on the roads and streets issues. So they're going to worry about access permits to their roads and streets. The capacity of their roads and streets to deal with that is usually part of their standards in regards to when they do their staff reviews and so on. And so if you feel that we've got terrible capacity problems with ACHD, and ACHD standards are not taking into effect the impact that are going on, in my opinion, the best approach there is to deal with ACHD and their standards with some potential modifications of those standards so that these issues can be addressed in that process. But I think you're right in what you just asked me.
Well, and that's very true. ACHD is policy-driven. They follow their policies very closely. I think one of the things we're seeing here is growth at the rate that it's happening is making it hard for the impact fees that are collected to keep up with the infrastructure that needs to be put in place, thereby creating a lag time. So we build it, and then it gets too busy, and then we shut it down and fix it. And that's a problem. It's one of the things we've had to deal with in the future. I don't know. I think we may have...
Mayor Steer, Chris Singles for the record. There's been a texted response from our representative from ACHD,
okay,
who's indicated in response to Council Member Christensen, this does include the adjacent approved and planned development. And that came when you were discussing the comments that they made in their response. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, yeah, I think our biggest problem here is growth at the rate that it's happening, and that's happening all over the Treasure Valley. And I don't think that ACHD does a bad job or anything like that. I think we're all experiencing something here that's our policies and the way we run things have worked good in the past, but the way things are going so fast, it's really hard for everything to keep up and keep things moving like we're used to. Build out on some of these projects usually took quite a few years, and now they're whipping through a phase or two in a year, and that's just not normal. They're selling houses quicker than they can build them. So we're just at that point right now where we've got to make sure that we're keeping up in regards to public works and sewer capacities. You know, there's a long-term plan there to, as things build out and the pipelines increase, we need to either increase the size of our lift stations or add pumps, whatever the case may be. Those are all in the plan. They may not be in place at the moment because the project has to happen before we can increase those capacities, but there is a plan for that. I don't think anybody's getting caught by surprise. The problem we've run into there, though, is project costs. You know, what used to cost us $1 million now costs us $2 million plus. So those are the things that we're running into and the issues we're running into. All the contractors are really busy, so they can charge what they want, and that doesn't work well for government entities. So I think we're just going to have to continue to plug along, and Public Works is working on plans as things come through, and I think we're getting there. Obviously, that is one issue that we can't get behind on. We can't wait until a sewer line is too full before we shut it down and build another one, so that doesn't work in this process. So those have to keep up, and I think that perhaps even maybe any kind of a draft agreement at the end of any subdivision should require that before final plats can be signed off, sewer capacities have to be met, and whatever intervention there needs to happen. I mean, that could actually just be a standard that we put in our finding the facts and conclusions of law and approval. I think we can just do that as a standard thing. So I think that's where we're at with that. I don't know. Did Christy, you have any other comment there?
Yes. She's also indicated that she's happy to call in and field any further questions.
Okay. Is there anybody wanting to direct questions for ACHD? We do have them on the – we can get them on the line.
It would be great to have somebody answer why they say we're going to be over capacity on something but still move forward with an approval without any plan for another 6 years after full phase build out.
Okay.
So.
One ringy dingy. I know, huh? Yes.
Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you so much for calling in. This is Councilman Christensen. I do have one question.
Yes. Christy Inselman with ACHD. Okay, Warren will go ahead and re-ask his question.
Christy, in your report, you guys mentioned that you generally agree with findings and recommendations of the TIS. The TIS did identify the roadway segment of 10 Mile Road between Ardell Road and Hubber Road is expected to exceed ACHD's level of service planning thresholds as a two-lane minor arterial for the 2025 full build-out. That section of road, it moves on to say, this segment is listed in the CIP to be widened to three lanes between 2031 and 2035. So my question is, if this is something that exceeds ACHD's level of service planning threshold at full build out, but something that won't be, that's only in the plan to be touched between 2031 and 2035, why can we justify a recommendation to still build something like that that exceeds that level of threshold?
Construction or have been recently approved, as well as any developments that we know that are coming down the pipeline, ones that maybe don't have approval yet. We do have them also take that into account whenever they do their traffic impact study. So when somebody comes in and there's a roadway such as 10 Mile that with their full build out may be over capacity, if that roadway is identified in our capital improvement plan, then we collect impact fees from them to widen the roadway. And so we can't require them to widen it as part of the development. Does that help?
That certainly helps, but we are looking at a 6-year period after full build out that is over threshold capacity.
Right. Well, and there are sometimes some lag. I mean, funding, I'm sure you guys know as well, is always an issue. And so we can't always go in and get those roads widened as quickly as we would like them to. But we do collect the impact funds that we match with our general funds to come back and widen those roadways. That roadway is currently serving at better than the level of service D. And for a two-lane arterial roadway, we do acceptable level of services, level of service E.
Thank you, Christy.
Okay. Does anybody have any other questions for Mrs. Inselman? Thank you, Christy.
It does, you know, and you know we're in a position, it just makes it dang near impossible sometimes, looking at what we know is right and knowing what we have to do. The schools themselves, we know what position they're in, and they're in capacity now, but they also make a comment. They did not respond to this, one, but we've had enough of responses to understand where they sit with capacity levels and things. It always seems at the bottom they make the comment, but when this is fully built out, we're going to be at or over capacity, so we're going to have to build more schools. And I just, it's hard to hear time and time again, yeah, we know that's, we know we're growing too fast. We know we're building too fast. We know the roads are dangerous. We know the roads are packed. We know the schools are full. But right now, it's okay because upon full build out, we're going to have to go this way and this way and do this with utilities, with schools, you know, with the sewer, the roads, the schools, things, the safety, whatever it may be. And it makes it really hard for the community to understand where our hands get tied at that point. You know, and I'm sorry for the soapbox right there, but it's just, it is what it is.
I get it. I get chewed on all the time for stuff. And I'm sure you do too.
John, did you want to make any comments? You don't have to vote. You can still comment. No comment? Okay. Never mind. John, you just sit there and look pretty.
No comment on that either, huh?
No comment on that even, all right. Good. Okay.
Well, it is unfortunate. I mean, we know the roads are horrible. And not horrible. They're congested. They need work, and you know, an explanation was given as to when and somewhat of how it takes place. Of course, we'd all like it to see it done quicker, but that's not going to happen. I wish, you know, we could have a better say in that kind of area. I mean, if our roads are at a D level, as stated by Councilmember Christensen, you know, it's unfortunate we can't do something to get it up, you know, B or higher, but that's just not in our realm. Our realm is to look at everything the applicant and the people have went through to get a piece of property to where it's at, and, you know, by ordinances, by everything it takes to get to something to this level has been done the right way. And so based on that, I mean, we have to push forward with it. We have no legal bounds to say no at this point, really. So I would move we approve case number 2001-S preliminary plat and the findings of fact, conclusion of law and order, and decision is presented in the council packet, and close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve case number 20-01-S preliminary plat and the findings of fact, conclusions of law and order, of decision is presented in the packet, and close the public hearing. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Did you say aye, Warren?
I did.
Oh, okay. All right. And so, just for clarification in this, since Councilmember Cardoza is not present and Councilmember Laraway has recused himself, is a two-person vote sufficient? Yeah, okay. All right, very good. All right, so that motion carries. Item 6B, public hearing continued from October 6, 2020 for exhibits and additional testimony in consideration to approve case numbers 19-11-AN, annexation, and 1908-S, preliminary plat for Ashton Estates East subdivision. Doug Hansen. Hi, Doug. Okay. Yes, please. Apartment. Okay, questions for Wendy Howell, Planning Director.
You're out on this one as well.
I think I'm okay. I was absent at that planning and zoning meeting, so I did not vote.
Okay.
I'm okay.
Okay.
Good, because I was tired of you sitting over there looking pretty. All right. Well, this is a public hearing. We'll go ahead and open the public hearing. I only have one person sign up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to testify who didn't get a chance to sign up and wishes to? Okay, Eric? Check.
Good evening, Mayor, Councilman. My name is Eric Scheck with Lincoln Homes. I'm pleased to be here tonight. My address for the record, 1406 North Main Street, Suite 109, in the room. I'm very pleased to be here tonight to have another opportunity to speak to you about the project, actually, it's needed. As Ms. Allen mentioned, since the last hearing, an opportunity to sit down and go through more of the details on the litigation. As you can probably understand, it's somewhat of an uncomfortable situation for us as well, working with our lenders and our financial partners who see that there is not enough capacity on record as it sits today to build all of the homes. And for that reason, just like other communities that we build, if there is a lack of infrastructure or a lack of improvements, it's our intent and understanding that we will have to build, finance, contribute to the construction of those utilities. And this is no different. We are going in agreement and understanding with the conditions and what's being asked of us. We're thankful that there does appear to be a solution here, which the third-party study will help bring to light. And then we can give our contribution for that, which will not only benefit this community, but will also benefit others in the area too. We'll be paying our share of that, of course, as we mentioned before. We are very thankful to build more homes in FEMA. The prior owners did do an excellent job in our opinion of designing a mix of lot sizes, which can offer a wider range of larger homes and smaller affordable homes. The demand for new homes here in FEMA remains very strong. We're nearly complete with the Ashton Estates community right next door, so this project provides us a great opportunity to continue to provide quality homes to families that may not be able to afford a 1 to 3 acre plot of land and all the upkeep that comes with that, but still live near amenities, pathways, and a growing commercial area, especially in this intersection, near this intersection. So, in short, I am asking for your approval this evening. Our hope is to immediately start construction drawings so we can be ready for development in spring and therefore complete the first homes by the end of 2021. This is a multi-phase development, our first out of 175 residential homes. Our first 49 will be the first ones to come online, which have the capacity based on our discussions with city staff. But we understand that for future phases, which, given the time constraints or the timing of when those phases will come online, this project is probably a 2+ year build out based on the sales pace of what we're seeing in the current market. So we feel very confident that there'll be a resolution and a plan in place to complete those improvements to provide us with capacity and time. With our understanding that we will be submitting our plans through the process for these additional phases, but we won't actually be putting a shovel into the ground until a real serve letter has been issued to protect our interests and also to make sure that we're not putting our project to the force, so to speak. We are in agreement with the conditions and the findings presented by staff, but if there are any other areas of concern that need to be addressed that might sway you to deny the project, we ask that you do have an opportunity to review and discuss the writing with staff and please do not deny the project. And we thank you again for your time, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Okay. Question. For Mr. Scheck.
I guess my question is more for the city engineer. If this is approved, how much of this subdivision does the city conserve? You could serve, no problem. Okay, that's pretty much clarified.
Yes, Bill.
Bill Gigray, city attorney, just for a matter of procedure, when you call on somebody else, I think it'd be good to get them on record because you've got to have a record and a transcript of what's going to be said, so who questions are being asked to, and then have them identify themselves. And I know Paul's trying to answer a question, and I'm not trying to be critical, but We won't create records if we don't follow that. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. So on a 38.5-acre parcel and there's 175 lots, are these all going to be single-family homes, or are we looking at some fourplexes, or do you know? I mean, that's a... So really small lots. Okay.
I mean, there's a combination of lots. There's lots that accommodate our product design for a two-car garage. Lots that accommodate a two-car garage. And then we also have what we call a product partner, which is a narrow two-car garage.
Okay, any further questions for the applicant? Not at this time. Thank you. All right, and again, I didn't have anybody else sign up to testify. Is there anybody who wishes to do so? I guess I'm not by looking at the crowd. All right, thank you.
Did we need to have Paul actually go on the record, come up and go on the record for that question?
Paul, can you just give us an answer to that question on the...
Sorry, on Paul.
See my bus driving?
How come you don't like Paul?
So phase one is all that. So he'll have to receive a will serve letter to continue. Okay, thank you.
Anything further for Paul?
No, thank you.
Thanks,
all how does council want to proceed here? Is there a lot of outstanding concerns that you want to look deeper into? I think the applicant recommended that we make sure we study this hard before anyone would deny. So.
Yeah, and I think this was the one, too, we really had hoped the district responded to, and they did, showing capacity. They read that off last time, but this really shows capacity. I, again, just struggle with the district knowing where they're at and where they have to be with these neighborhoods, and they know with the build-out that they're going to bond for more schools at this point, but as of right now, there's very little capacity. There just won't be any capacity once the build-out's there. So... just another thing that, you know, I think I ran my my ground with the last discussion being held, and the concerns are still warranted here, but we kind of hashed that out and got that taken care of already, so I think I'm good.
I think my issue was the sewer capacity, which has been addressed, at least to start with.
So, and knowing the public has access to all this, I do just kind of want to read why my concern is where it's at with the school, and I'll just read from their response here. It just says, push your out the wrong way. It just says, we are aware of additional proposed subdivisions in the area, Indian Creek Elementary and Kuna Middle School attendance zones that may bring them to capacity in the near future. Once these schools are at capacity, we have to bond. Well, sorry, I'm reading it. Let me read it verbatim. Once these schools are at capacity, our Board of Trustees will have to determine whether or not a bond vote will be needed to expand our current school capacity. So they're speaking the full truth, but my concern lies on the fact that with the current growth rate, they know they're going to be at capacity with these, and it's approve the subdivision, but we'll be at capacity when it's fully built. So we'll have to look at doing something else in the future with that. So that's how it's got to be done. I understand that. I just wanted people to really be aware why the concern was there to begin with last round, because they didn't have a response with that. So we're good.
Okay.
Well, then I guess at this point we close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to close the evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries.
Okay. Then I would move we approve case number 1911AN, 1908S. And the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order of decision as presented in the packet, and close the public hearing.
Second.
Motion is made and seconded to approve case number 1911AN, 1908S. Findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order of decision as presented in the packet, and close the public hearing. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. All right, that brings us to item C, public hearing and consideration to approve case numbers 20-01-AN and 20-03-S for Ledgestone South Subdivision. Jace Hellman, Planner 2, step up to the stand.
Appreciate the introduction. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. For the record, Jace Hellman, Tim Hunting, Zoning Staff, 721 West 4th. The application before you this evening is proposing to annex approximately 97 acres in between the city limits. The applicant proposes to zone approximately 84% of that development as R6, which will accommodate 291 standard single-family home lots. The remaining of the development area proposed to be zone R8, which is in compliance with the comprehensive plan, which designates the property as medium density. Similar to original Ledgestone preliminary plat, Ledgestone South is proposing to incorporate 102 outdated lots, which are single family homes that face the street but are accessed via a 20-foot alley, and their garage and driveway are behind them. The net density of this project is 5.65 dwelling units per acre, while the gross is 4.07 dwelling units per acre. The applicant has proposed 11.6% of the project to dedicated usable open space, which is compliant with the city code. Pipestone South Sewage is anticipated to flow to the Patagonia lift station. The sewage is subsequently lifted to the Danskin lift station. Per the city engineer's comments, at this time, neither lift station can support this project as they're currently configured. Staff would note that if the council approves this project, the applicant will be required to work with the city engineer to provide a solution regarding the creation of additional capacity. The commission has been provided as condition number 6 in section I of the staff report. Additionally, staff proposes 2 additional conditions to be added to the overall conditions of approval. The first would be the developer, owner, or applicant shall submit or shall not submit an application for the final plan to the city public works director. Issue the will serve letter to the applicant stating that the city's Patagonia and Danskin locations or other city improvements have capacity to accept the wastewater discharge from the proposed development. The second would be in the event the will serve letter is not issued within the time the applicant is required to report a final plat, the applicant shall have good cause and be eligible to receive, pursuant to Tennessee Code 6-2-3, a time extension to file a final plat up to and until a will serve letter has been issued. The applicant has been made aware of the current status of the lift station, and it's my understanding that their project engineer has already begun to have conversations with our city engineer regarding potential solutions, or at least discussing the lift station and mainline deficiencies. If council approves the annexation of preliminary plat, staff would recommend that the applicant be subject to the approval listed in section 9 of your staff report. The 2 recommended conditions staff mentioned this evening, which I have typed out, and I provided the city clerk what I'll provide to the council as well, just so you have language in front of you. As well as any other conditions that this decision making body decides to impose. With that, I'll stand for any questions you guys may have.
Okay, questions for Jace? Nothing at this point?
Nothing
Thank
yet.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Again, this is a public hearing. We only have the applicant signed up to testify. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify in this matter? Okay. Thank you. Ms. Sutton, is Ms. appropriate or?
Ms.
Anything? Okay. I do that, but then I always feel like maybe I shouldn't just use the first name. All right. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. And like, I feel like I live here sometimes. And I like it. I like being here to represent projects for human. My name is Jane Suggs, Jim State Planning, 9840 Overland Road in Boise. Representing now by Jim South, Subdivision of Utility Development. Thank you, Jay. Takes a pretty good job. He outlined all the details, which I thought was great. And let me start off, like last time, by reiterating that we need a comprehensive plan for medium density, and our preliminary plat meets the requirements of community zoning code. And we agree to the conditions in the staff report, and we also are aware of the 2 new conditions and making an assumption as they're read by the different planners that those will be exactly the same conditions to all different projects that are in the vicinity. So to make sure that we're being consistent with those. One thing to say preferences, one not, so I'll make sure that we're all making the same conditions. I can agree with that. I'm going to try to be brief on this because Ledgestone, the community of Ledgestone, you've seen before, came back and we're under construction now with the original Ledgestone that is up on Hubbard. If you look on page 508 or 541 of your total package, you'll see the vicinity map for Ledgestone South, which is just below the original Ledgestone project. And just
design Wedgestone South to actually connect very seamlessly with Wedgestone and to add even more amenities for the residents of these Wedgestone communities. We are requesting annexation with two different zoning designations, the R8 for the alley-loaded lots and R6 for the front-loaded lots. Both of these designations are supported by the Community Comprehensive Plan. Dave went over that real clearly, 393 lots. Let me tell you that 26 of those lots will be R8 size. Now, we're just looking at the sizes. That is for the alley-loaded lots. 41% will be the size of the R6 lots in your zoning code. Actually, 33% of the lots will be larger. They'll be actually the size of an R4 lot. They don't all have the exact required frontage, but they will have the size of R4 lots. So we have a really nice mix of lots. And I actually have a little drawing, but unfortunately, I was unable to get it to you for the time, so kind of a little colored-up drawing showing you the mix of sizes. Our gross density is just over 4 units to an acre. If you go to page 589 of your total package, you'll see our landscape rendering. I'm going to talk about a few of the special features of Central Park. It's almost 4 acres, and it will include a swimming pool, and that will serve the residents of Wedgestone and Wedgestone South. The park will include also a play structure, a picnic shelter, and some parking spaces for those that are having to drive their small kids and all that stuff that comes with that. We've also done something too. You might recall that with Wedgestone, we actually built a nice regional pathway along Mason Creek. Now we actually have space between Wedgestone and Wedgestone South. So if you look on the north, on the landscape plan on the north border of Wedgestone South, you'll see that we also have a 5-foot sidewalk that will run along. It's a half a mile length between the two projects. Actually, there'll be a couple of streets that we cross because we did allow for sub streets. And this pathway and a regional pathway along Mason Creek means there's really no reason that the folks here won't get their steps in. I think they'll actually be able to, you know. And that's a great amenity you'll find in those subdivisions. Of course, we have our other pathways that direct people to the park areas. With the construction of Wedgestone South, we'll add to the mid-mile collector Strobel Road that runs from Hubbard all the way down a half mile as you head south. And we'll construct an extension of Bardell Road for about a half mile from that Strobel Road over to Locust Road. So you can see this is where we are doing some work. Basically, we would love to see these mid-mile collectors go in. And these are the collectors that allow the neighbors to cross from one subdivision to another without having to go out on the arterial. To address Mr. Christensen's concerns, sometimes we have an ACHC staff report that does show us that Wedgestone, Wedgestone South, Patagonia, which has recently been approved, all of those projects are really having some impact on the Hubbard Road, Locust Grove Road, Deer Flat Road, and Highway 69. And what they've done for each of us is they've given us a threshold of the number of lots that we can actually come in with a plat. When we come to our 301st lot, we will actually have to stop. And either we do a TIS, a new traffic study, to make sure that we have accurately captured what's going on in the area, or we have to do some funding for construction, and if we have some ability to do that. Often this is off-site construction, so we can't always do that. In some cases, again, we have to maybe do some funding or just stop working and building homes. So this is the way ACHC is looking at some of the improvements. I think each one of the subdivisions out there, I know Wedgestone has a certain threshold and Wedgestone South has a threshold. The number of lots that we build for, we have to regroup. And I think Patagonia probably has a very similar requirement as well. We are very aware of the sewer, and as Dave mentioned, our project engineer, David Bailey, has already contacted Paul to talk a little bit about, find out what was going on with the third party, which is someone to actually do the work for the city, come up with the options for solutions, and hopefully you'll have someone else also, you know, with that same company or someone to come up with some of the financial options for that too, about how that will work, and that's the city administration piece in. So that's a good thing, because that's where one needs to go. What will be the financial obligations of the developers as we move forward? Again, as Mr. Christensen said, we do have a letter from the Kansas School District, and they do outline the capacities, the enrollment, current enrollment. This was for 2020-2021. I know that's a little deep right now, but in their capacity for Silver Trail Elementary, Fremont Middle School, Cuna High School, and Swan Falls High School, and White Roads and schools, you actually reach your capacities, and then you go. They rarely go to school and wait for kids to come. So, unfortunately, that's just how our work is in development. Again, I want to restate that we're meeting the land use designation of the comp plan and the requirements of the zoning code and the subdivision requirements in the code. And we agree with the staff report, the conditions in the staff report, and the new additional conditions in the staff report regarding sewer. I very respectfully request to approve our annexation, new zones, and preliminary plat. And also the questions.
Okay, questions for Jane?
No, yes. But a reminder, I have to recuse myself from this one also.
Okay.
And if you would, may I be excused?
Oh, yes. No questions at this time. Thank you. All right, I gotta get my phone back up. And, so Ada Planning Services, Ada County Planning Services says that this doesn't comply with our, with their area expansion, and maybe it's agricultural. And I'm assuming that's because this is an annexation, and so it doesn't meet their comp plan, but it does meet with ours. Is that correct, Jason? Well, I'm reloading, so talk amongst yourselves and have fun. You can, you know, go ahead and go on and mine. my blue line is moving about, well, I can almost see it moving. It won't be long now. Another half hour, I'll be up and in. So, any questions, comments? Oh, there it is.
Mayor, were you referencing the Ada County Development Services Department?
Yes, I was.
Oh, okay.
It's like towards the very bottom of it.
Yeah. It's page 597 of 665 or 91 of 148 in 60. 597 of 665.
President Trump says there's not 1 minute to waste.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that was mainly my question. I just couldn't ask it properly since I couldn't see it anymore, but. So again, then we're going to be putting a lot of traffic out on those back roads. I know they're going to be doing some road improvements and that type of thing. But one of the main concerns I hear is that we're going to be plugging up all the roads outside out of Cuna. I don't know how anybody else feels about that. The last one that we did and this one here put a lot of traffic out on those little old roads. I guess I'm mostly concerned about the density when you get there.
There is a lot of comments made by CHD in regards to that as well, but they do really outline more or less how they can resolve it as they build, but that doesn't go to say that when you start combining those issues that we've identified and haven't been able to really do anything about, and then we look at an entire department that is highly against this just based on where it is and what kind of land it's overtaking. It goes to say that, you know, this isn't just one part of CUNA people are worried about. This is the whole vast city. The roads are getting bad everywhere. This isn't just one specific section that I really wanted to focus on.
Sure.
Initially. And, you know, in this case, ACHD, again, they do recommend, but they do put forth a lot of concerns as well with it, but they outline how they can fix that as well. So that's why I didn't have a lot of questions in relation to that. You know, and the schools, as she said, responded as well, and they were able to bring up and say what they needed to say with capacity, and it makes sense that you've got to be at capacity before you go build, but that. That doesn't withdraw the frustration I think a lot of people are seeing.
Well, and again, like sewer capacity, it's not our intention to fund development, so that project would have to pay for those infrastructure needs and then work in on a latecomer fee type of thing or some way of being reimbursed rather than the city funding it. We just don't have the money in the hoppers to make those improvements, and so for a project like this to go through, that has to be considered and agreed upon. And yes, Bill.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, Bill Gigray, City Attorney. With regards to the infrastructure for water and sewer and even irrigation, remember those are proprietary funds. And it would be contrary to our Supreme Court law with regards to a fee or a tax if you expand and enlarge your system using your own money to do that. That's why all these developers and staff requires that they have, if there are upgrades that have to be made, that they have to pay for it. You can't use city proprietary funds to expand and enlarge your system. Or the Supreme Court says you're charging too much for hookup fees or for service fees, and you're going to be subject to a claim that you've got an unlawful tax. So that's kind of how the rule is in Idaho. So I think the staff reports follow that rule, and that's why developers always pay for extension and enlargement of the system. And if it takes, if it has to be extended beyond where it exists now in order to get to the new development and it'll serve benefited areas, that's where we get into latecomer fee agreements with them when they oversize a line. In this instance, unlike the subdivision situation that you faced earlier this evening, annexation is a legislative matter and a matter of discretion. Zoning and conditional use permits and subdivisions are where you're applying your ordinances to a permit. In this instance, they're seeking annexation. So if you determine that you don't want to annex something, you can exercise legislative authority to not annex. But you obviously want to have some rationale as to why you're doing that. You've done it before. I think this is a matter of you're looking at the build-out of the city. How is it? Is it infilling? Is it extending out? I mean, I think you folks make that decision, but I just draw it to your attention that when you decide this matter, the first item is a matter where you can exercise discretion.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, that's my major concern, is especially a project this size that we just did one that has to have some things taken care of in order to provide wastewater treatment, and one of this size is that much more concerning. I'm really, in my opinion, I don't think we want to do something that we don't have a good solid plan on how to get there and how to serve it. That's what bothers me most about any of these where we have trouble with wastewater treatment and that type of thing. So, it's just a large project, and I really am uncomfortable with moving forward with something like that big until we have a plan in place for being able to know that we can service it and what that would entail, because I don't think it's ever in anybody's favor to figure out that later that you're going to have to charge them a whole bunch of money to make something happen. And then you have an annexed piece of property, and then you know, hands are a little more tied into what we have to be approving there. So that's just my thoughts. I'm just concerned that we're moving ahead too quickly with some of these things when we're having discussions on our ability to serve. And, I know the school district is talking about how they'll have to bond in the future and that type of thing, but that's not the case here for our situation. I'm not sure how successful bonding is going to be in the future anyway, so that's also concerning. But I think for my thoughts on this, I'm afraid that we're getting too far out there with some of our ability to serve.
Mayor, I want to.
Yes.
I want to echo what you just said because I think those concerns have been very vocal from you, and I appreciate you being honest with that. And we talk a lot about our relationships with our partners at Ada County, and when we agreed to also their impact, their impact plan in a sense for the CUNY's area of city impact, and we agreed to it just like. You know, they look at ours and agree to ours, and they look at this like it goes against what they're trying to do in their eyes as well. It goes both ways, and it's you've got to be able to do what's best for the city at any given time, and maintain those relationships without completely discrediting everything they have to say, as hard as that can be sometimes. And I want to make that clear that. You know, with a lot of the things that I project with that, it's not that there's not relationships there and it's not that there's trust there, but you have to take it both ways and you have to look at the good and the bad when it comes to that. And when it comes to annexing something that carries all the concerns that are in my head, that just, it really does validate a lot of things that were said and made clear to me.
Well, that said, too, I think that some of the things that we talk about, like especially with school district, I don't want to give them a hard time about any of this, because they're not a land use agency. And so they tell us where they're at, they show us what they've got, and they tell us what position this will put them in. So they're not going to say, this is really going to hurt, so don't do this project. They're just saying, this is where we're at. We got this many kids in this school, and so when these things start building out at some point, we're going to have to bond for more. And so they're not going to recommend approval or denial or anything like that. So I think we just want to be careful to make sure that we don't make it sound like the school district isn't speaking up enough when they should and that type of thing. So not being a land use agency, I think that's why we get the comments we do from them.
Well, you two about said it all. What am I supposed to say?
Whatever you want.
I guess I'm on the same track. If we know we can't serve them, then why would we annex them? I mean, it's a plot we've seen before, in essence, the style, the layout, it's got a lot of offering of different sizes of lots and home styles and whatnot, and that's great. But at the end of the day, if you take a shower, you want the water to disappear and not be sitting in the tub. So if that's an issue, I think we need to address that first before we address more preliminary plats and will serve letters and all that. So that's where I think I'm at too.
Okay.
So then we need to, I move we I guess we'll be done discussing that.
Did we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation, Chris? We did not do that.
Okay, so then I move we close evidence presentation and proceed to deliberation.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carried.
Then I would move we deny case number 20-01-AN and 20-
Just the annexation.
Oh, sorry. Just the then.
Yeah.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to deny case number 20-01-AN annexation And we did have a second on that. We may need to amend that. Let Bill go ahead if you would like.
I think you just answered my question. I didn't hear exactly what Councilman McPherson said, but I assume you're dealing with the annexation. And it should be like you did in the previous one. If you deny annexation, then the other applications become moot.
Right.
Because they're not annexed into the city, so you're not zoning and you're not doing the other requested applications. And that's how we dealt with this with Spring Rock, if you'll recall.
Yes.
And I think in that instance, Mr. Mayor, with your permission, just as a matter of procedure, I think you continued the hearing for the preparation of findings and conclusions, because I'm not sure that matches the recommendation that you have from the staff. So I think you would need to continue the hearing for the receipt of those findings for your consideration at a date certain that you would set in time for staff to prepare it.
So option two there with that would also work.
Okay. So then I also move we continue the public hearing to the next meeting.
Probably Monday, November 2nd, because election day is Tuesday, November 3rd.
November 4th.
The day after, okay.
To the November 4th City Council meeting. And direct staff to prepare and draft findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order of decision for consideration by council.
Second.
All right. So we're going to run that as an amended motion to deny case number 12-01 annexation and continue the public hearing to a time and date certain, which is November 4th. Council meeting and direct staff to prepare a draft findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order of decision for consideration by council. Does that sound like the motion that you made in its entirety?
Yes.
And is your second still standing?
Still stands.
All right. That's the motion and second. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. All right, that takes us to item 7A, consideration to reauthorize funds for test well 12 and approve resolution number R64-2020. Paul Stevens, you are up.
We kind of had a little bit of a weirdness go on here. We didn't actually receive bids. Had to find our support for a couple of different things that went on. One guy was out of state and couldn't comply with Idaho Code 44-1001, which required 95% of the team to be from Idaho. So well, Bill was turning out two or three people, and so even if they had two, it still wouldn't be 95%. So he didn't actually bid, and then the other company couldn't meet our time schedule. So I consulted with Bill because we did get him in bids, and Idaho Code says then we negotiate with the low bid. So I got both guys to send me their bids, and we were able to negotiate a price for Treasure Valley Drilling. And some of
$142,900.
Okay. Let me see the approval of that tonight.
Does anybody have any questions on the test well and the contact bid? Okay.
Where did I go? I lost mine. Then I would move we reauthorize funds for test well 12 and approve resolution R64-2020.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution number R64-2020 and reauthorize the fund for test 1212. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. Item 7B is Bobby Withrow.
Could be Mr. Bobby.
And I believe this will be the hard copy that's on the counter here.
The hard copy in front of you is the updated park development agreement with the county. The one that I submitted Thursday had some verbiage. Mr. Gingray did make sure we were able to get everything fixed and kosher. That it exists right now and we're moving forward with it. I do have the redline version, which I'm going to kind of go over at the end, but it is real similar to what we have in the back. Okay.
Questions for Bobby? And this was one that would have normally been on the consent agenda, kind of a just an agreement on somebody developing the park, and there was a couple things that needed to be cleared up in there, so they took care of that, and that was done today, made a couple of minor changes, so if you have any in-depth questions and you want to see how...
I'm good, you guys are good? So just to clarify, this is resolution R63-2020, correct? Did I see it? 468?
R64-2020, is that what you said?
R63-2020.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 60. Oh, I'm sorry. Looking at the wrong one.
Okay, then... there's no other discussion. I move we approve resolution R63-2020.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded to approve resolution 63-2020. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And that concludes our business for tonight. We are getting closer on our project out front here with our flagpole and all of our good things. So we should be well ready for a November unveiling, I believe. And that'll be exciting. Good stuff. And then we did the final walk through on downtown, and they got a punch list. There's a few things they're going to take care of, and probably most of those by now are getting close to being taken care of. But a couple of things where there's cracks, so they need to take out some concrete and replace, and a couple of cuts in the asphalt that need to be taken care of yet. The lights, part of them were on an electric eye and part of them were on a timer, so they weren't in sync. So half the lights were on and half were off. We decided that wasn't really the effect that we were going for, so I think they're getting everything on the timer that's set at the same time. So hopefully that'll all work out well, but it's looking good. I'm just so pleased that we're coming to an end on that project. It's gone a long time and a lot of work and effort by a lot of people to make that happen. And they're using the example that Chris was largely responsible for, multiple funding sources to make a project like that happen, which adds a lot of complications and makes it tough, but everybody working together, we were able to pull that off, and
we got a really good product for a really good price for the city of Kuhl anyway. So I appreciate all of our partners and all the work. ACHD had people out here the entire time and making sure that the project was going along as it should, and they did a great job and still are. So we appreciate their efforts in that and everybody else. I mean, it's just been, there's so many people I can even begin to start listing them. So very pleased with that. Anyway, did anybody else have anything they wanted to bring up or mention? Did we mention we got a new chief? I forgot if we talked about that or not. All right. Well, thank you very much, and meeting adjourned.